Footprints in the Snow by Bud Sparhawk. Narrated by Kate Baker. Alberto had first heard about the aliens when they crashed their beat-up and battered starship into the Pacific Ocean. The monstrous ship they'd arrived in had sunk. He imagined that the wreckage was no doubt polluting Earth's waters with radiation, toxic chemicals, or some weird aquatic species that would wipe out the few protected salmon that could still tolerate the sea. Bart had dismissed this, saying that the water was already polluted. But it was human pollution, by damn, and not that of the aliens. The news was full of stories about hundreds of survivors escaping their sinking ship on rafts, pieces of wreckage, and even the corpses in their desperation to survive. Meanwhile, the State Department argued with Immigration over who had jurisdiction, while the Department of Agriculture debated with Homeland Security. Defense decided it was none of their concern, but filed claims of authority just to cover their ass, he thought. As the jurisdictional disputes raged into incoherence, the Coast Guard tried to handle a number of aliens well beyond their capabilities. The news talked about the survivors that rode the Japanese Current to come ashore along the Oregon coast's wide beaches and throw themselves thankfully onto dry and safe land. Further south, on the Monterey Peninsula's white beaches, hundreds of gape-mouthed tourists watched as the California police tried unsuccessfully to round up the Suwannee. When he first read about this debacle, he'd hoped the government would corral the aliens into some internment camp out in the desert, like they had his grandfather's neighbors over 100 years ago. But no, the fools in Washington decided to grant them amnesty, as if they were political refugees instead of a bunch of stinking, freeloading aliens eating up his hard-earned tax dollars. The government could have used the same amount to keep them from coming ashore. Alberto's neighborhood had been chosen to participate in the alien relocation effort, designed to introduce Earth's populace to the refugees from the distant war against the Drach, which few on Earth really cared about or could pronounce, given that the war was being fought so far away that there was little immediate risk that the Drach would ever reach the Earth. He'd been infuriated when he got the notice from Immigration. In the interests of social integration, the government was putting the Suwannee in the vacant house next door. And for free. He'd had to slave for years to buy his own place on this cul-de-sac. His house had been earned, not given to him on a silver platter. "You can't trust the damn politicians," he complained to his friend Bart. "They only seem to think of the next election instead of what they owed us taxpayers."
"It isn't as if we'll get nothing out of helping them," Bart had replied. "Our scientists will learn some advances in technology from the Suwannee. Maybe even figure out how to build our own starship."
"That's all bullshit, Bart. It doesn't mean a damn thing to people like us. All the politicians want to do is pander to a bunch of things that aren't even human, for God's sake. It's indecent. That's what it is."
"I'm sure it's for the best," Bart replied, like the liberal airhead he was. Bart always wanted to look on the bright side instead of facing the gritty realities of life. For years, he tried to convince Bart about the dangers foreigners posed to the American way of life, bringing their crazy ideas and weird religions along with their too spicy food. Although he had to admit that Fedor's, the new Iranian-Turkish restaurant, served some nice dishes. But they were the exception, not like those other strange restaurants.
"Give your new neighbors a chance," Bart said.
"By the way, don't forget Thursday night bowling. Our club needs a few more wins for the trophy."
"Sure, providing the government doesn't give my house away."
Despite being warned, the reality of finding the aliens arriving was very upsetting.
"Oh, they're doing it. They're finally moving aliens into the neighborhood," he began as soon as Bart answered. "Not only the neighborhood, but next door to me."
Bart hadn't needed to ask what Alberto was talking about. They'd discussed nothing else since the official notice had come.
I keep telling you, give these Suani a chance. They might be nice, Bart advised. You never know.
Why should I? They're probably dirty and smell, Alberto said darkly.
You should go meet them.
To hell with that. I'd never go up there, even if they were screaming for help.
You're required to render aid if needed, Bart said. Go ahead. Introduce yourself. Get to know them.
Alberto didn't bother to say goodbye.
Go over and introduce myself, he muttered.
As if. More likely go over and be eaten, I'm sure. The moving van delivered an assortment of beat-up furniture and boxes of various sizes and shapes, some marked as Goodwill or some other charity. Junk, most of it, he imagined. He'd kept an eye out for the new neighbors, but never saw them. Soon after the moving van left, he spied a black government SUV driving up and wondered if it was delivering the new neighbors. He'd watched the house through the afternoon, but never saw anyone going in and out. He scanned the evening paper, looking for reports of the Suani, standing woe-begotten on street corners with their begging bowls, their young clinging to their mother's tattered spacesuits, and whining loudly about empty bellies. He suspected, although he couldn't find any articles to support it, that those who couldn't beg would probably take dirty, filthy work no respectable human would stop to perform. Nor could he find anything about aliens sleeping under bridges or living in the sewers. Not yet. Alberto's backyard was small but meticulous and precise as a chessboard. His garden was trimmed with luxurious lamb ears and ranks of orange marigolds. A cluster of daisies were planted by the back fence, and an assortment of daylilies, coneflowers, and daisies filled in the center. He tended his plants as carefully as if they were the grandchildren they'd never had, which had made Gwen unhappy but didn't seem to bother their son at all. This late in the season, the yard was becoming unsightly. He snipped away dead blooms and stems, removed faded leaves with his pruning shears, and after a moment's debate, finally decided to pull up the dying marigolds near the fence. It was a pity the plants hadn't given him a few more weeks of beauty. In stark contrast, the neighbor's backyard was an unkempt jungle of weeds, dandelions, and knee-high grass. The steady, snipping concentration of his gardening took his mind off of everything else. He dumped the residue in the recycle bin before climbing the back stairs to his house. As he reached for the handle of his back door, he heard the new neighbor's door open. Bart would have told him to stop and wave, start the initiation of becoming neighbors, pass on a few tips about the neighborhood, and maybe start to build a friendship. But at a single glance, he saw that this newcomer was just too different, with all those legs and a head too large. Who the hell knew how the alien monster would react? It might take his wave as an insult, an attack because of some slight he knew nothing about. For all he knew, the Suani might be crazy, afflicted with some alien version of PTSD or something. He closed the door. It squeaked shut behind him. It's just wrong to help these lazy Suani. He complained to Bart at the bowling alley. If they'd had any spunk, they would have taken better care of their spaceship or whatever it was. War damaged, they said. Bart answered after he rolled a spare in the sixth frame. You're up next. They probably stole it to begin with, and they didn't know how to maintain it. He'd lost a new car just a few years ago to some crooks. Some of his insurance payment had been spent on a cheap used vehicle that nobody would steal, but most went to a world-class alarm system for his house. Your children coming in for Christmas? Bart asked as they watched their competition roll a spare. No, they're visiting the in-laws instead, so it will be just me.
Bart nodded as he rose to take his turn.
Well, mine's bringing the grandkids, and... Alberto knew why he'd stopped. The whole grandchildren issue was an open wound. Had been for years. Worse for dear Gwen, much worse. When it was his turn, he threw a strike, which put them 5 pins ahead of their rivals, the Tasco Tail Gunners. If they could keep their lead, they'd close out the series 2 games ahead for the night. I wonder if your new neighbor bowls, Bart mused as they watched one of Tasco's bowlers throw a strike in the 8th frame. Might be a good addition to the team. Why don't you ask whenever you see him? Alberto couldn't believe his ears. It, you mean, not him. And I don't intend to ask for your information. Their club went down by 1 pin because he was too upset by Bart's suggestion of putting an alien on their team that he couldn't make a simple 6-9 split on a spare. Alberto occasionally peered out his side windows to watch the alien's house. He wondered what they could be trying to hide behind the bright blue curtains they'd put in the living room windows. The curtains were too thick to see through, and the color seemed incongruous with the neighborhood's style. Everyone else on the cul-de-sac had installed gauzy white curtains in their front windows. He noticed the Suwannee had put something by the front door, instead of a decent mugo pine or even a dwarf juniper like everyone else in the neighborhood. They'd chosen to plant some large Christmas cactuses that sprawled untidily over the edges of their pots. He complained to the Homeowners Association, but Sally Poulos, the association's president, replied with smug satisfaction that the offending cacti were within the covenant guidelines. He'd had run-ins with Sally, and knew she felt he'd already made too many other complaints. Of course he had. Somebody had to uphold community standards. "Am I the only person who understands how wrong this is?" he complained to Bart. "Doesn't anyone understand how these Suwannee are pushing the boundaries of good taste? These limp cacti are just the tip of a wedge." "Poulos is right, you know. So long as they stick to the covenants, you have no cause to complain." "But the dark curtains and ugly plants are just the first steps. Other far worse changes are sure to follow if we allow this to pass." "Don't you think that's a bit of an exaggeration?" Bart said. Alberto bristled. "You know what I think? I bet those Suwannee have somehow swayed Poulos's weak mind with their brainwaves." "And why haven't you?" Bart asked, barely hiding a chuckle. "I'm probably immune because of my common sense," Alberto insisted angrily. "By God, if the association isn't going to face them, I'll do it myself." "Well, be sure to wear your aluminum foil hat," Bart answered. He didn't try to hide his laughter. Alberto wore his good jacket for the confrontation, then wrote a note about where he was going and why. He put it on the table near the door. That way, if this visit turned ugly, the aliens would be accountable. After a moment's thought, he took the note upstairs, intending to hide it under a pillow in case the aliens came looking for it. But he immediately changed his mind. What if he hid it so well no one would ever find it? Returning to the kitchen, he tucked the note in the refrigerator's vegetable drawer. An alien would never think to look there, and sooner or later someone would have to clean the fridge, if anything happened to him. Yes, the drawer was a reasonable place for it, he thought with a smug satisfaction. He went down the sidewalk and made a stiff little turn to march to the Suwannee's front door, the whole time feeling like a soldier on his way to a battle, whose outcome was very much in doubt. He rang the bell and waited. Nothing happened. He put his ear near the door to detect any indication of someone trying hard to act as if they weren't there. He knew there had to be inside because he'd never seen them leave. He raised a hand to knock when the door suddenly flew open, leaving him standing there with his fist a foot away from the top of an alien head. The creature was a lot shorter than he'd estimated from seeing it from the back door. The tiny alien skittered backward and screamed, "Aye!" before it fled into the house's dim interior. Moments later, a larger, more robust alien stomped to the door on multiply articulated legs and glared. Alberto thought it was a glare, although it was hard to tell given the Suanese rigid face. The alien's four eyes looked mean enough to tear his heart out if it thought it could get away with it. He knew that there was no way he was going to get close enough to fall within the alien's grasp. Best to stay out here, within sight of the neighbors, he believed. I just thought... He began the little speech about community standards and fitting in that he'd rehearsed all morning long when the Suanese arm abruptly shot forward. Glossed. Its harsh accent nearly made the introduction incomprehensible. Is handshakes? Alberto looked down at the twisting mass of writhing worms at the end of this thing's arm. Automatically, he had started to extend his own hand, but quickly withdrew it, fearing how horrible any contact with those squirming digits might feel. "Your house," he began again, trying to recall what he'd planned to say next as he, for the first time, realized that the thing was wearing a Yankee sweatshirt. In its forehead, might as well have been emblazoned with a 666. He gagged. "The Yankees? That was the last straw." He pointed to the other houses with their decent plants and white curtains. "That is what we want to see," he said, and then pointed at the blue curtains and cactus. "Not this." There was no need to say more. The differences had to be obvious. "Good day," he said and turned to go. "Have a nice day," the Suwanee screamed at his back. Fridays were trash and recycling pickup days. Everyone had to have their bins and bags on the street for collection. Alberto got up especially early so he could beat the worst of the traffic. He resented having to drive 20 miles to work while the Suwanee never seemed to leave their house. He was locking up when a furtive movement caught his eye. It was a tiny alien rummaging in the neighborhood's bins and bags, occasionally throwing something into a box being held by a slightly larger creature. They worked quickly so that by the time his garage door opened, they were gone. He wondered what they might have stolen. It couldn't have been anything of value. For his own part, he'd thrown out only newspapers, magazines, some old albums he'd digitized, and a scattering of junk from the garage along with the week's normal accumulation of empty bottles, boxes, and cans. As he drove along, he wondered how long had they been doing this, collecting cast-off detritus of the cul-de-sac's activity, and why? What sort of parents would send their children on such demeaning tasks? Should he report them for neglect? Now that he thought about it, the small Suwanee had been rather shabbily dressed in what looked like cast-off clothing. Were they thin from lack of decent food, or was that their natural frame? Suddenly, he was very concerned about their welfare. You couldn't blame children for their parents' behavior. Besides, they had looked sort of cute as they scurried along. The first frost had killed the rest of the annuals, leaving only the hardy perennials. With the seasons changed to winter, even those would soon become empty of foliage and flower. The weatherman had once again warned of an early snow, possibly before Christmas. He was raking a drift of leaves into a neat pile when he noticed two of the small Suwanee, who had raided the trash, playing in their unkempt yard. He watched the smallest one carefully select a handful of tall grass stalks and begin to weave them intricately into something circular, much as a little girl might do on a summer's day. He was amazed to see how cleverly her tiny fingers manipulated the delicate grass stems, bending but never breaking a single strand. In a matter of minutes, she was finished and put the wreath-like crown on her head before prancing around the yard, dancing like a human child. The difference was that, instead of a princess dress, she wore a tattered shirt far too large for her. The other child paid her no attention as he wove grass and weeds into a larger, more complex, basket-like arrangement that, when finished, looked much like a wickerwork spacesuit helmet. He was about to put it on when the little princess abruptly stopped its dance to stare directly at Alberto. She screamed just as she had when he'd frightened her at the door. Both raced away, leaving their handiwork behind. Alberto was clearing the last of the brown daylily leaves when he noticed the children in their empty yard. Despite the morning's threat, or another freeze, the children were dressed only in their thin, ill-fitting clothing as they played. His first impression was that they had somehow fashioned new toys from the remaining weeds, but on closer inspection, the objects they held appeared to be fashioned from colored cardboard and metal taken from the refuse bags and recycle bins. He wondered what else their parents did with all the things they sent their children to pull from the trash. They certainly didn't recycle. He had yet to see them place anything on the street on Friday mornings. The smaller one was sliding something that looked like a miniature sleigh across the grass stubble, while the older one held an elongated tube in the air as he raced about yelling, "Zoon! Zuzoon!" Alberto imagined it was supposed to be a spaceship. It was a pity the children had to play with the refuse while their parents were doing nothing productive. He reached in his pocket for a piece of wrapped cinnamon candy to suck on and, on impulse, tossed a handful into their yard. "Go on. It's a present," he encouraged as they puzzled over his scattered offerings. "Sweet," he said and pointed to his mouth. The little girl caught the hint instantly and, stripping the wrapping, with one hand tossed the candy treat into her mouth. Instantly, Alberto was afraid that he'd made a mistake. He knew nothing of alien biology. What if sugar was poisonous to them? What if the cinnamon caused some ghastly reaction? Oh, stupid. Stupid, stupid. What had prompted him to act without thinking? Before he could warn the other child, it too had eaten the treat. Oh, Lord, Alberto thought. Now he'd killed both of them and... There was no expression on either face as the kids stared four-eyed at one another and then at him. They both screamed and raced into the house, twirling about to wave enthusiastically before disappearing inside. Well, maybe the candies weren't poisonous after all. The Suanese cactus bloomed late under a cloudy sky that gave a foretaste of the snow to come. Alberto wanted to get a closer look before the flowers disappeared. Cactus blooms only lasted a week at most, less if there was another freeze. He was leaning down to examine the lush red flowers when the door opened, startling him. "What?" the large alien towering over him demanded. "You do." It was holding a complicated wiring panel in one hand. It might have been from some discarded computer. Alberto stood. "Your cactus," he struggled to explain. From the street, it looked like Christmas decorations. "Rismus?" the alien asked. "Is explung, please." Alberto thought explaining a Christmas tree's decorations to, what was the thing's name? Glotzt? Was one of the most bizarre things he'd ever done, especially when he'd gotten to the why part. "And after the tree has been decorated, we put gifts under it," he concluded. "For your dead mate," the alien chittered. The words hit Alberto with the force of a hammer. He realized that the government must have told Glotzt about Gwen, giving them information they had no right to hear. His hands clenched in rage. He took a step forward. "You damn aliens should never have—" he screamed. Sorry. Glotzt quickly skittered backwards, slamming the door behind him. Alberto was so furious he ripped the bright red flowers from the cactus, scattering the petals to the uncaring wind. "How dare they? Oh, it was an invasion of privacy, damn it." Despite his fury about Glotzt, he continued to be concerned about their children. From what he'd seen, they probably wouldn't get any toys except what they could make out of trash. He was rummaging around the basement, clearing out the accumulated crap he no longer needed, when he ran across a box of unopened toys Gwen had bought in anticipation of the grandchildren they never had. It was senseless to hang sentimentally onto these when they would painfully remind him of his daughter's miscarriages. He threw them in the recycle bin. On Saturday, he was grateful to see the Suwanee children playing with some of his discarded toys in the cold backyard, although he reflected they were technically trash. Through the kitchen window, he also noticed the Suwanee adults standing on the back stairs and staring accusingly at his house. From their stance and lack of expression, he nevertheless read resentment on their rigid faces. They should worry less about his discards and be more concerned about their children playing in the cold without warm coat between them, he thought. The next Thursday, a few days before Christmas, he bought a little plastic model of the alien starship and, feeling foolish about the impulse after he got home, threw it in the recycle bin. Along with the fuzzy panda he was going to give Bart's grandkids. He got angry enough about the plight of the alien children to stamp over to the Suwanee's house and pound on the door until Gloss opened it. This time he was fiddling with a sparking array of plastic tubes and electronic parts. It certainly didn't look like anything out of a computer, 3D, or other device. "You need to take better care of your children," Alberto demanded immediately, ignoring the distracting gadget. "It's shameful the way they dress. Children need nice things, warm clothing for one, and I don't see you making any effort." Glotz stared at him for a long moment. "Is wanting exchanges," he pointed at the bundle in Alberto's arms. "No, damn it. I want to see the children properly cared for. If your kind is going to live among us, at least have the decency to behave like responsible adults when cold weather comes." It was infuriating, having to lecture this alien on something so basic, so simple that... The thing in Glot's hand began to buzz softly as Glot's absently twisted the tubes against each other. With a casual toss, he pitched it aside where it floated gently to the floor. "Will soon be chilled," he said, looking at the sky. "It's too cold for the children already," Alberto argued. "Here, take these." He thrust the two new children's coats into Glot's arms. "Merry Christmas," he added before he turned and walked home. Bart insisted that Alberto buy a small tree for the holidays. It was a stupid expense with Gwen gone these last 3 years and the children visiting their in-laws. All the tree would do was make the house smell like a forest and scatter sap and needles on the rug. But since Bart and some buddies might come around on Christmas Day to cheer him up, he'd have to decorate it, if only to show he was getting over his grief. As if. Shortly after he got the tree home, he took it to the backyard to cut off the base and trim the shape. "Bit of foolishness," he grumbled as he pulled the saw from the shed, but knew Bart was right. He had to preserve the traditions, and having a Christmas tree was one of the few things he'd do to celebrate. The snow began to fall early on Christmas Eve and kept up through the day. The dancing white flakes in Alberto's headlights made driving the old car with bad shocks more difficult than usual. He could barely see 100 feet ahead through the swirling flakes. Outside of the beams, there was only darkness. He'd seen few other cars, and those had been headed in the opposite direction, faint glowing lamps emerging from the darkness brightening as they passed, and then disappearing somewhere behind him. He couldn't even see their taillights in the mirror because the snow was so thick. "Looks like a white Christmas for certain," he thought bitterly. The blanket of snow would be great for people who didn't have to venture from their homes, but promised pure misery for the drive to work the day after Christmas. Had he already passed Bart's place? Driving as cautiously as he'd been screwed up any sense of time and distance, especially in the dark. Suddenly, through the snow's curtain, a glowing red light appeared in the sky that, a moment later, turned to green. Now he knew where he was. 3 blocks from the turn into his cul-de-sac. He'd been driving slower than he thought, but the snowflakes flashing in the headlights made it seem like he was moving at warp speed. Like those effects in the Star Something or Other show. It had been a hackneyed effect originally and had been made even worse by modern 3D screens. As he pulled into the garage, he thought about the lonely evening ahead. Before, when it was just the two of them, he and Gwen used to exchange gifts on Christmas Eve, a family tradition that they'd continued even after his parents and hers had passed. After they cleaned up from dinner, he would pull some trinket from under the tree to hand her, just as she'd do later for him. Afterward, they would sit on the sofa and share the glow cast from the lovely colored lights on the tree until they started to slumber. On Christmas mornings, he'd usually wake early to brew a fresh pot of coffee and wait for Gwen to come down the stairs and prepare the cinnamon rolls. After the rolls came out of the oven, they usually sipped their bitter coffee and slowly ate the rolls until the kids would call. Those were nice days. Wonderful memories. But gone forever. Now, his Christmas Eve would be watching some old movie, drinking a shot or two of brandy after setting a glass aside for Gwen's memory, and getting all sniffly drunk as carols played on the radio. He'd go to bed knowing that he'd wake in the morning to eat a bowl of cold cereal, peel an orange, and drink an entire pot of coffee, despite what it would do to his bladder. After that, he'd open the kids' gifts, call to thank them, and muddle through just another crappy Christmas day. Alone. Dawn came too late on this cold, snowy Christmas day. The heat hadn't come on yet, so Alberto struggled into his thick old bathrobe and slipped his feet into the felt slippers Gwen had given him a few years before when he cut that thought off abruptly, else he'd spend the entire day thinking of other more cheerful Christmases. As he drank his brandy, he'd hung a few ornaments and strung the colored lights on the small tree he'd put in the living room. That was his only gesture to acknowledge the season, and he would be damned if he turned on the tree's colored lights until after he'd warmed up the leftover coffee and eaten his cold cereal. When he got to the head of the stairs, he noticed a soft glow coming from the living room. He grunted. I don't remember leaving a light on. Waste of electricity it was. But when he reached the bottom of the stairs, he saw that the glow was coming from his little Christmas tree, which had been transformed into a glittering, sparkling wonder. There were ornaments unlike any he'd ever seen, hanging among the old ones he'd randomly thrown onto the sparse branches. Silver and gold gauze floated like mist among them, and at the top was a glorious, diamond-bright, multi-pointed star. Beneath the tree was a small package, nicely wrapped in aluminum foil and tied with a cheerful bow. On closer examination, the spider's web of silver and gold turned out to be cheap cotton thread, while the glittering ornaments had been painstakingly constructed of foil, package wrappings, and colored string. Oh, Bart, that scoundrel, he laughed. It would be just like him to sneak in during the night and surprise him. He was the only other person who knew the alarm system's code, so it couldn't have been anyone else. He plopped on the sofa and opened the small package, expecting a coffee mug or a box of tea, but instead found an intricately braided grass frame the size of his hand. In the frame was a small picture of his Gwen when she was very young. He recognized it as an old photograph from the album he'd discarded weeks before and had regretted losing ever since. He gently touched the image. It had been taken shortly after their daughter was born. Back then, they'd been living in subsidized housing and eating ramen for dinner. He paused and wondered if that was what the Suwanee were going through, poor and having to depend on strangers to survive. After those first few years, things had improved, and he recalled happier times filled with smiling faces of friends and relatives, and a succession of Christmas trees that were ever different but always the same. He stared at the picture for an hour, remembering as tears rolled down his cheeks and shattered into smiles. The memories it evoked was a wonderful gift. Certainly nothing Bart would have thought of. But if not Bart, then who could have done all of this? Who could have so quietly snuck past the locked doors and alarm system to decorate the tree as he slept? Surely whoever had done this would have left footprints in the fresh snow. He carefully put the precious frame aside and went to look. Rosy dawn had finally arrived, and with it enough light to clearly see the rows of tiny footprints from his front door to the hedge where some snow had been dislodged. At that moment, he knew in his heart, who or what had granted him these wonderful Christmas memories. There was no sign of life at the Suwanese as he finished shoveling the walk between their two houses. As soon as he hung his coat and gloves, he walked into the kitchen to prepare the sweet cinnamon rolls for the children. He hoped their parents would like them as well. This story was originally published in Analog, December 2015.